Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, 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 it's another episode of the Locked On Red Sox podcast. Thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. I'm Lauren Campbell. I'm your host. I cover Boston sports for NESN. I've been in the Boston media scene now for almost 7 years. Born and raised in the Boston area, so I absolutely love being able to come on here day in and day out, talk Red Sox with you from a fan's point of view, a reporter's point of view. And today we're going to reminisce on the postseason that was. That was the Boston Red Sox taking out the Yankees, taking out the Rays, and unfortunately falling to the Astros in the ALCS. That's right. It is a very, very special crossover episode with Locked On Diamondbacks and Millard Thomas. We have a fantastic conversation you do not want to miss. So that's going to be this entire show. We talked for about a half an hour, 35 minutes. And we discussed everything from how sweet it was to beat the Yankees, how sweet it was to beat the Rays. Was there sort of a turning point? We look ahead to next season and the free agent class and what the Red Sox should do. We called it a sweet little therapy session, so that's exactly what we did. Please enjoy our conversation. Like I said, we had so much fun. Thank you, Millard, for having me on. I am so excited for next season to already get underway and to see what both of our teams this year do in the offseason.
All right, Locked On listeners, we got a special guest for you guys today. We've been doing this little series where we've been doing a therapy chair session for the Locked On hosts who've had their teams knocked out of the playoffs. And today it's Locked On Red Sox host Lauren Campbell's turn to sit in the chair and just get all her emotions out, talk about basically anything she wants to get off her chest. We're going to talk about today. So Lauren, we are inviting you back on the stream. We had to kick you off a little bit. Lauren, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for asking. World Series just wrapped up, yesterday? Did you watch any of that series? Were you into the World Series?
Oh, yeah. So baseball is like my number one sport. So as long as it wasn't like the Yankees and Dodgers, then it was good time.
Okay, if it was the Astros, would you? I guess it was the Astros, so never mind. That was going to be a really bad question. So the Red Sox, I mean, this was a pretty good season for them. I mean, considering maybe, you know, their expectation levels come into the season, I don't know where you have them. I'll ask you that later in the pod. But you look at this Red Sox team, they're now a couple years removed from that Mookie Betts deal. Betts was pretty good in the postseason, but maybe not as good as he was in 2020 or during that World Series run. So when you look back at that deal, of course, I'm sure it still hurts. When you trade a player like Mookie Betts, it has to hurt. If the D-backs ever traded Ketel Marte, trust me, I will be shedding tears. But looking back at it, has it been a little bit more stomachable, if that's even a word? Because Verdugo, he was pretty good in the postseason. Jeter Downs seems to continue to crush it in the minor leagues. Has that made it a little bit easier to stomach now, a couple years removed from it?
Yeah, I think it certainly makes things a bit easier, for maybe lack of a better term. But I think now that we're a full season and not so much like a COVID shortened season, you know, into this, and the Red Sox kind of have seen what they get with the centerpiece in Alex Verdugo, as well as they've seen a lot from Jeter Downs in the minor leagues, and they really like what they see from him. It's not easy to lose a player like Mookie. I feel like he is somebody who is a lifer on a team, and obviously now he's probably going to end his career with the Dodgers, but yeah. At the end of the day, it certainly hurts. I think it's always going to hurt. It'll be 10 years from now, and I'm going to be sitting there just watching Mookie still rake on the Dodgers, like, remember when the Red Sox had him? But at the end of the day, like I said, I think everyone saw this trade coming leading up to it. And the Red Sox went to the ALCS, and they did it without Mookie. So it's, you know, you got to take the good with the bad there.
Yeah, doing it without Mookie's crazy. Verdugo, he seemed to come through a lot of times in the clutch and high leverage moments. How do you feel about Verdugo? Do you think you could get 80% of that Mookie Betts production? Maybe not defensively. It doesn't seem to have maybe the same power as the Mookie Betts, but overall, he just seems to be a pretty good baseball player.
Yeah, overall, he's pretty good. I think that he's also still young, so I think there's still more to reach. I don't think he's tapped into his full potential yet, but I like what I've seen overall. Definitely would like some room for improvement on both defense and offense, but that time will come. Like I said, he's young. 80% of what Mookie can do. I think that's generous, maybe more like 70. So not too far off, but you know, like I don't want to go so far like saying like 60-40 or it's 65, but I do think more like the 70 range, I think. But no one is ever going to be Mookie. No one's ever going to, you know, replace Mookie. There's never going to be another Mookie Betts in MLB, but I think, you know, Verdugo has shown flashes of what he can bring, and it's just a matter of continuing that and being consistent.
Yeah, I think that had to be the most shocking part, is because everyone just felt like Mookie Betts was a lifer from his play to just being a culture guy. It was like, why are the Red Sox trading this kind of player, especially to a team like the LA Dodgers? Those two teams just seem to love making blockbuster deals. I remember that one deal a while ago now where it was like the biggest swap of money in MLB history. So those two teams love making deals. I like Verdugo, though, even though he might only be 70%. Mookie Betts offensively, he seems to be another great locker room guy. The players seem to love him. So I'm high on a Verdugo, and if Jeter Downs can pan out, because the way he's playing right now in the postseason, or not the postseason, the minor leagues and the fall league, he seems like he could be the real deal. So if he's a potential all-star with 70% Mookie Betts, the Red Sox might end up winning that deal, which is crazy to say now. We still got to give it some time, but in a few years, we might look back and be like, you know what? Maybe the Red Sox actually won that deal. And heading into this season, the expectation levels, where did you have the expectation levels for the Red Sox? Because I actually made a bet with one of my friends. I was like, the Red Sox are going to be a top five run scoring team in the American League. Like, they got boppers up and down their lineup, and that turned out to be true. But I also felt like this team was going to be like around 500, just because I was like, after Eovaldi, they have absolutely no starting pitching. And that kind of turned out to be true, but it really didn't matter. This team just smashed their way to 90 plus wins and they made the postseason. Where was your expectation level at for this team entering the year?
So I pegged them at 90 wins, which wasn't all that far off. I expected them to be or get into the ALDS. I thought they would not get out of the ALDS. So overall, I mean, this was such a fun season. I think that Red Sox fans should be, I mean, we're not going to be satisfied unless they win the World Series, but given where they were, they were pegged to be the fourth in the AL East. They were not even supposed to make the playoffs. They weren't supposed to beat the Yankees. They were not supposed to beat the Rays. They were supposed to get swept by Houston. And they really kind of just showed how resilient they were throughout this season. And, I mean, it was just, after Eovaldi, like you said, there wasn't really a whole lot of trust in those pitchers. But you're throwing Garrett Richards in the bullpen, and he looks fantastic. Nick Pivetta was a pleasant surprise. Overall, very surprised. I still had a lot of faith in this team because of the offense, and that's why I went the 90-win route. Like I said, I was not expecting them to get to the ALCS, but it's always little stings when it ends, but it was a wild, fun ride.
Yeah, this has to be like one of the rare instances where you're not totally upset when your team gets knocked out the postseason, because just the fact that they made it to the ALCS and they were two games away from winning, like when you were entering the playoffs and you're like, all right, we somehow made it here. This Red Sox team with absolutely no pitching and only offense, we somehow made it here. We're going against the Yankees. Entering the postseason, we're like, all right, this is our World Series. We're probably going to get swept by the Rays. Whatever happens, happens. But if we beat the Yankees, I'm happy. That's going to be our championship heading into the offseason.
Yeah. I mean, and you think about it too, with the Yankees, how strong their trade deadline was. All of a sudden, people were wondering, are the Yankees going to win the AL East now? And they started to come back down to earth, probably at the worst time that they could have done that. And they were, I mean, the Red Sox were not the favorites going into the wild card. They weren't the favorites going into the ALDS. Even me, I had the Rays. I mean, I had the Rays winning in five. I had the Astros winning in six. You know, there wasn't a lot of faith around this Red Sox team, but it wasn't because they're not good. It's because of the teams they're playing. But overall, it was just, I mean, you look at the teams they went against, and on paper, the Red Sox should have lost in the wild card.
Yeah, on paper, they probably should have. I mean, that Yankees lineup is pretty good up and down, but they just seem pretty reliant on the home run. That's just a lot harder to get in the postseason, even though the Red Sox seem to get it repeatedly, at least until the last two games against the Houston Astros. When you were going against the Yankees, what did you root for more? Because I do think there's a distinction between these two. Did you want more for the Red Sox to beat the Yankees, or were you rooting more for the Yankees to lose to the Red Sox?
Definitely for the Red Sox to beat the Yankees. It's always a lot of fun watching these two teams battle it out. It's a lot more fun with a lot on the line. And when these two teams are good, it makes it for a very entertaining game. But there is just, there's something about watching the Red Sox beat the Yankees. Maybe it's just like the lifelong Red Sox fan of me, and I've been covering this team now for 7 years, where it's just like, it doesn't get, I mean, it's so good every time. It doesn't get any better. It's just like, it's one of those things where it's like, you're from Boston, you're a Red Sox fan. It's great watching the Red Sox win. It's great watching them win against their ace pitcher. It's great watching them put up all these runs against a really stacked team. And it's just something that makes you kind of sit back and be like, maybe Chaim Bloom had something up his sleeve the whole time at this trade deadline, because it didn't really help the Yankees in the long run.
Yeah, when you look at that trade deadline, were you upset the Red Sox didn't make more moves? Because the Yankees, they went out there and they got two bats I felt like were just luxuries for them. I felt like they didn't need a Joey Gallo. The outfield was already their strength. And I was like, all right, let's just add more to the strength. I like the Anthony Rizzo move because they needed an upgrade at first base. They were able to get that. People probably want them to get more starting pitching, but still, they added basically two all-stars to their lineup, while the Red Sox added a nice player in Kyle Schwarber. But I think everyone was like, hey, the Red Sox need starting pitching, and they didn't go out there and get that. So how did you feel about the Red Sox deadline, especially comparing it to the Yankees?
I was really annoyed because Anthony Rizzo was in play for the Red Sox. He was right there. It ended up working out well with Bobby Dalbec in the long run, but they really, really needed to address their pitching, and they went out and got Hansel Robles and Austin Davis, two relief pitchers who are proven to be unreliable. And I'm sitting there, I was like, what are you doing? And it was, I love Kyle Schwarber. I think he's a fantastic ball player. His bat is, we Red Sox fans saw it this year, but I was like, it's not that I don't want Kyle Schwarber. There was just no place for him. And I was like, this almost seems like a move where they just wanted a big bat. Oh, he's hurt, but we'll try him at first base, a position he's never played before, a position Christian Arroyo never played before, and nearly ripped his hamstring clean off trying to make a play there. So definitely I was feeling a little irked, just because there was more there to be done. And I was thinking too, like, it's going to be a loaded free agent class. So maybe Chaim Bloom's just sitting back and being like, we're just going to spend some money in the off season, figure out, what JD Martinez is going to do, and go from there. Like, there was no sense in, I guess, going out and getting a quote unquote big name pitcher if it's going to be for a rental.
Yeah. Do you feel like the front office was like, look, this team is competing at a high level. They're playing above their probably water weight right now, but this team is not really a true World Series contender. Do you think the front office foresaw that? That's a reason why they didn't make any all-in moves like a Yankees team who feels like it's championship or bust for them?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, they were confident in the people they brought in. They were confident in their roster and also in Alex Cora. I think they really wanted to kind of see what he had there. And like I said, that this free agent class coming up, it's stacked. And it has the potential to get even more stacked with the opt-outs coming, which really could come between now and any time Sunday. So I think at the end of the day, they didn't want to give away too much for a rental. They love this long-term stability thing, because when Chaim Bloom was hired, the Red Sox didn't really have too much of a farm system because Dave Dombrowski blew it all up, which that's exactly what he was brought in here to do. So so that's what everyone knew, that's what he was going to do. So it's been like a slow rebuild of the farm system. They want to commit to that with the free agent class coming up, and then the uncertainty of JD Martinez, because if JD Martinez opts out, you all of a sudden, you have a lot more money to spend. So I think there was a lot of what ifs, a lot of like, let's be competitive in 2022 and beyond, and just kind of get through the rest of this year with what we have.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know how to like describe the Red Sox over the last 10 years, because I feel like dysfunctional is not the right word, but they're somehow like dysfunctionally functional, because they will go with a Dave Dombrowski to blow everything up and end up, I think they won a World Series under Dave Dombrowski. Yep. So they'll do that. They'll blow up the farm system and everything. But then they'll be like, all right, complete 180. Now we want to bring in another guy, a different guy, where basically a whole different philosophy. We're going to rebuild the farm system. And then we're still going to be in contention teams away from the World Series. Like, how do you explain this team that's always able to reinvent themselves constantly, and somehow they're always able to replenish that farm system and build within as well? That's something the Yankees have never been able to do. It's something that I give high respect to the Dodgers, because even though they go out there and pay a lot of players like a Yankees, like the Red Sox, they are also able to build from within. So how are the Red Sox consistently able to just keep reinventing themselves? Because I remember those Bobby Valentine years, and those were not very
pretty. God, just unlock some bad memories there. But I think it speaks to the front office. I think it speaks to Alex Cora too, I think in particular. you know, in 2013 under John Farrell, you had this random group of ball players that seemed like, you know, the Johnny Gomes, the Mike Napolis, where they're not, I mean, they're stars in their own way, but they're not like, they're not a Mookie Betts, they're not a Mike Trout or something, someone like that. And it was just a bunch of guys that were just really good at baseball, really just like, they took to who they were, they took to what they were good at and capitalized on their strengths. And the Red Sox have always been able to do that, like kind of the next man up almost mentality. But to be able to just come in here, start to replenish the farm system, not really kind of go into like a huge like rebuild or blowing up the team that we've seen, not just in MLB, but throughout NFL, NBA, NHL. So it's just like constant, not like, they just have really good chemistry too. And you've had Xander Bogaerts around for 2013?
And, yeah, a while now.
And you've had Rafael Devers now for 4 or 5 years. So you get like these veteran guys, and then you bring in veteran leaders like the Kyle Schwarber, veteran guy, JD Martinez, when you brought him in, another veteran guy who was just, they know their way around. They know how to lead. They know when to kind of step back, and they know when to help. So when you bring in that kind of personality, it's not somebody who's trying to be the star. It just makes the team mesh better. And somehow the Red Sox have been able to do this probably since like 2004 when they started winning championships again.
Yeah, I think the clubhouse is probably the biggest indication for the Red Sox during the years when they're going to be good. When they have a manager they like, and when they have just like the right mix of teammates gelling, when they're eating fried chicken and beer in the dugout, that's when this team is not working. But
exactly.
When you have an Alex Cora and a JD Martinez and a Mookie Betts, the list goes on and on. Though that's when those Red Sox teams are good. And there's enough argument for David Ortiz. There's enough reasons why he should be in the Hall of Fame. But if you need another one, I know I don't have to tell you this, but for the listeners out there, just go look at those 2013 World Series stats. I think he batted like .688 in that World Series. Like, the man was unconscious. They say one person can't carry a team in baseball. He might have been the only guy to carry a baseball team through a whole series with what he did offensively in that series. Absolutely insane. So Red Sox, they take down the villains, the Yankees, their rivals. Boston's throwing a parade, basically. Like, we beat the Yankees. Yeah. I was watching those post games. Like, Boston was going crazy in the streets. Like, were you around that at any point? Were you at the rallies, maybe?
I was not.
No.
Okay. I was not. I'm not a big crowd person, which is funny for somebody who loves going to like ball games and obviously covers the Boston sports teams. I'm not a big, like, when the crowds are so forced like that and like there's almost no way out, I do not like that. I'm just like, nope, that's too much for me.
I can't blame you. It's probably accelerated the anxiety there over the what we've seen the last couple of years. So we'll leave that topic alone. But okay, so the Red Sox, they beat the Yankees, they take down the villains. But now here comes a matchup against the best team in the American League in the Tampa Bay Rays, coming off their best franchise record. Like, it felt like the Red Sox won their World Series, and now it's like, all right, we're just happy to be here. Like, just blow the doors off us, Tampa Bay. Like, we don't care. You can send us home into a nice offseason. We're going to be drinking champagne on the Yankees' dime. It's okay. But the Red Sox, they ended up not just winning that series, they kind of dominated Tampa Bay. Like, when you look at that series, do you think the Rays were playing more out of character and just trying to do too much when they're starting like bullpen guys to start the game, doing that whole weird philosophy, then let's bring in our rookie pitcher later in the game and do all this? Or do you think the Red Sox were just playing more to their strengths and they just got hot at the right time?
You know, I think it's a little of both. I think the Rays got a little cocky, and I mean, rightfully so. When you're pegged as the favorite, you're the better team, and you've taken care of this team with ease through the regular season. So I think they got a little cocky, but I also think the Red Sox were very motivated. They had all the momentum on their side after beating the Yankees and just kind of riding that, even though they were starting the series on the road. And probably also helped that Tampa Bay and the Trop, they have tons of Red Sox fans. Red Sox fans travel really well down there. So that probably helped a little bit in like the, it's not Yankee Stadium where it's constant booing and Red Sox suck chants and anything else. But, you know, I think once I saw, was it Randy Arozarena and Nelson Cruz eating the popcorn in the dugout, just kind of acting like, oh, like I have no worries in the world. I was like, oh no, like we see this every year. We see like this kind of turning point. And I think they just got a bit too comfortable. I think they thought that this is going to be just like the regular season and forgot that regular season stats don't mean a darn thing when it comes to the postseason, because it's a fresh slate for everybody. And the Red Sox certainly proved that for quite a few games, even against the Astros.
Oh yeah, that those players eating popcorn is basically reminiscent of Aaron Judge after what, game two, coming out the boombox playing yes. Little New York, New York. Like, you gotta wait till the series at least ends. Yes. You can't come in after one win and be like, all right, let's play music in front of the other team and just start showing off. Like, you can't do that. You gotta have a little pride and respect for the opponent and at least wait for the series to be over before you start mocking them. So I guess Tampa Bay deserved what they got there. And I just overall, I just hate most of their philosophies and their game plans. Like, of course it works in the regular season. They pile up the wins, but it's just not a style of play that I would be a personal fan of. Like, I'm glad this is not the Locked On Rays podcast, because I feel like that'd be kind of frustrating to watch every day. So I'm glad I'm doing the D-backs, but I would definitely take the Rays record despite their style of play. So you beat Tampa Bay. You get past now two AL East division opponents, and now you're facing the Houston Astros. And before we talk about that series, I just want to know, how do you feel about the Astros overall? Because I think a lot of people group the Red Sox and Astros kind of in the same class just because of Alex Cora, and there's some overlap there, and they kind of assume they're cheaters. They got a little stank on them too, just because they were under some investigation. So overall, do you kind of look at the Astros as like maybe an ally, or you're like, or are you like everyone else and like, nah, they're the big bad villains of American League?
I'm more like everyone else where they're like, I won't call them the big bad villains. I just think they're very unlikable, and I think they became unlikable after the sign stealing scandal, the trash can. You know, everyone knows that. But I'm like, you know, it's 4 years ago. But my whole gripe is that the players, they gave out information to gain immunity, and that's fine. I have no issue with that. It's just, you can't come out and say this was players driven and be like, but they're not gonna receive any punishment. And I think they got a little cocky with that. I just don't think they have a very likable team. The only person who's really that likable is Carlos Correa, and that's because Alex Cora is like best friends with him, and they're really close outside of baseball. They do a lot of great things in Puerto Rico together. I just think they're a very unlikable team. They're obviously very good, so it just kind of fuels my hatred for them. But overall, I'm just like, no, they just don't do it for me.
I feel that. Everyone hates the Houston Astros. I'm a contrarian, so I like to root for the Astros. Probably the only man outside of Houston who does it. So I will continue being a contrarian. I will continue to root for them. But when you look at that Red Sox series against the Astros, when did it actually sink in that this could be a potential World Series run for the Red Sox? Because the way their offense was playing, it was out of their mind bananas. Went off against the Yankees. Destroyed the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, they were putting up historic offensive numbers. And then Kike Hernandez was just on this insane streak as well, Eddie Rosario type streak as well. So when exactly did it set in? When was it, when you guys were two games away from potentially going to another World Series? Was it when you were entering the ALCS? When did it sink in? Like, this could be another magical season where the Red Sox just somehow end up with a World Series that no one expected.
So it sort of came to light when they were talking about the Callum Scott song, the Dancing on My Own, when that became kind of like the anthem. I was like, oh, this is very reminiscent of like 2013, and just kind of everyone's enjoying it, just having a great time on this roller coaster here, and just seeing everyone singing in the locker room with the champagne showers. And then when Kyle Schwarber hit the grand slam against the Astros, I was like, this is it. This is it. Like, my prediction of Astros in six is bad. Like, the Red Sox are going to the World Series. I was convinced. And unfortunately, the offense just went cold. Like you said, Kike Hernandez was incredible. All of a sudden, he went cold. Hunter Renfroe could not hit the ball. Rafael Devers is swinging for the fences. But, you know, as soon as I saw that grand slam, I was just like, this is it. The Red Sox, just give them the World Series trophy right now.
Did they ever say what was up with Devers? Because I know there was a lot of discourse, because every time he swung, he like grabbed his arm and wrist and went down to one knee. Like, I never looked into that. Did they ever say what was up with Devers?
It was forearm tightness or forearm fatigue. He was wearing a compression sleeve. But what was weird to me about it is they said that it only flared up when he would swing and miss. When he made contact, it would be fine. So whenever he dropped the bat after not making contact, it kind of made sense. But also, like, why are you taking these hell hacks if you're going to swing right through the ball? I understand he wants to hit home runs. He wants to get his team on the board, and he's a power hitter. He hit 37 home runs in the regular season. So I get that, but it's like, you need to make sure that you're not popping your shoulder out of place, that you're taking care of that arm. It's the playoffs. I understand, but hopefully it's just the fatigue and the soreness and doesn't get any further than that, because he had an ankle injury in 2020. So just piling on up.
Yeah, I guess he was like, if my arm's going to hurt anyway, I'm just going to go ahead and just swing for the fences here and just try to increase the lead whenever I can, because that dude has major power. He's one of my favorite players to watch in baseball, and he's got that baby face. There's just such a kindred spirit around Rafael Devers. But Red Sox, they end up losing to the Houston Astros. But overall, I mean, the fact that they even made it that far, like, were you even bummed when the Red Sox lost? Like, of course you were a little bummed, but like, did it actually like weigh on you? Because of course there's some years, like I'm sure Yankees fans were crushed after that wild card game. But as a Red Sox fan, you're like, we beat the Yankees, we destroyed Tampa, and we took a couple games against the Astros. Like, yeah, we were two games away from another potential World Series run, but I think we still had a pretty phenomenal season.
Yeah, 100%. I was bummed because it's never a fun time watching your team get knocked out of the postseason, especially Cinderella story. It was just a lot of fun. What really bummed me out the most is my grandmother is a diehard Red Sox fan and has been for her entire life. She's 93. She watches every game. She was staying up late watching these games. And so she's always bummed when the season ends. And it's just like, I called her the next day and she's like, not much of a ball game, so not much else to talk about. I'm just like, oh no, like our phone calls are going to get a little shorter now. But that's the only thing that really bummed me out. She was having so much fun this season. And that's like, as much as you have to enjoy this team going to the ALCS, a team that wasn't even supposed to make the playoffs, it's still just like, well, that sucks. But it's not going to weigh on me like if they lost a wild card game. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, we went two wins away from the World Series. A team that was experts and analysts across the country were like, this team isn't even making the playoffs, fourth in the AL East if they're lucky.
Yeah, because I feel like most Red Sox fans are like, I'm not even sure I want the Red Sox to win as badly as I want the Yankees to lose. Like, those two feelings are pretty much neck and neck with Red Sox fans. So I'm sure it would not have been a fun offseason if you guys lost to the Yankees in that wild card game. But when you look ahead to the offseason, at least, the Red Sox have some interesting pending free agents up and down this roster. I'm not going to go through all of them, but some key ones I thought were pretty interesting. You got JD Martinez, $19 million player option. Kyle Schwarber, $11 million mutual option. Rodriguez, unrestricted free agent. And Christian Vasquez has a $7 million club option. When you look at those four players, do you think all of them are likely to come back from just that core four? Because those seem to be the most important four, unless you think there's someone else. But just in terms of my opinion, those seem to be the most important four that the Red Sox have within their own or within their own organization that could be leaving. Do you think any of those four will be leaving, returning? What do you think about that?
So my gut tells me that JD Martinez is going to opt in. But everything else that I've seen, I think it was Ken Rosenthal or Buster Olney, I can't remember which one, they said they expect him to opt out because they believe that a DH should make at least 20 mil. He has a $19.35 million option, so it's not too far off. But if there's going to be a universal DH, all of a sudden he becomes more valuable to any other team out there. That's even though true. He's aging, he's injury prone, but he's also versatile. He's probably going to hit at least 30 home runs every year, drive in close to 100 runs every year. So you know what you're getting with him, but my gut tells me he's going to stay for that final year and then play for a big contract, maybe not in terms of years, but in terms of money. Erod, I think they will try to work something out on a shorter term, like a 1 or 2 year deal.
Maybe a prove it deal.
Yeah, exactly. Because he missed all of 2020. You're never going to hold that against him. 2021, he started off so hot and then he could not get himself together. I don't think in 2019, when he won 19 games, I'm not going to call that a fluke, but I don't think that's who he is. I think he's more like a 13-14 win guy, which is still pretty solid. But if he can get in on a team-friendly deal, I think it's worth bringing him back. I think it's worth bringing Christian Vasquez back. He's, you know what you get with him. I think that catchers are just, you know, they're not these, they're a dime a dozen, I guess. But you know what you get with him. Players like him because he's very respected in the clubhouse, calls a good game, good defensive catcher.
He's not bad offensively either.
Right. He's really come around the last two or three seasons at the plate. So it's, you know, that's a really, and 7 mil, just lock him up for that one year, one more year. And I think there was one more, wasn't there?
Schwarber.
Schwarber. I think he's gone. Unfortunately, it was fun while it lasted. But I think after the season he had, especially in the second half with the Red Sox, he's going to make well over that 11 mil. And I just don't think the Red Sox really have a place for him. I think it's just a matter of they don't want to shuffle people around. And if JD Martinez opts out, go and get Nick Castellanos. You don't really have to shuffle too much around.
Yeah, Schwarber is a good player. If you told any team they had a Kyle Schwarber, they would. But with the Red Sox, it was just a weird fit to put someone who's never played first base at first base. And you look at someone who's going to be taking his spot, hopefully in the future or I guess next season, because he played basically all of this year, and that's Bobby Dalbec. And he was pretty good. He was up and down a little bit. He started the season pretty cold, but I think he had a phenomenal second half where he just seemed to tear the cover off the ball. Like, do you think the breakout is coming next season after what you've seen this second half from Bobby Dalbec?
I do. And I think a lot of that, too, has to do with bringing in Kyle Schwarber, because you are Bobby Dalbec, first base is your position. And all of a sudden the Red Sox are telling you you're going to lose your position to someone who's never played before because you're not performing up to their standards. So I think it kind of lit a fire under him, made him work a little harder. And he's still young. There's still plenty to work out. But I think that what we saw at the end of last year is something that's going to be consistent. And if this is going to come next year or even the season after, Red Sox will be a good shape for first base.
Yeah. He's just another one of those guys that the Red Sox just continue to produce. And sometimes they do these with these corner infielders where maybe they show flashes like a Will Middlebrooks or a Travis Shaw, but they never actually hit that ceiling. But Bobby Dalbec seems to be maybe a different caliber of player than those guys. And they just repeatedly do this. I mean, I'm looking at their lineup now, Devers, Bogarts, all homegrown guys, even a Vasquez. Bogarts has been there, like, he's only 28, but he's been in that system since he was like, what, 16 years old?
It's like forever.
Yeah, like he's been there like close to like 20 years, it feels like, even though he's only 28 years old. So I have so much respect for the Red Sox always being able to build within. But when you look ahead to this offseason, you, of course, got to add some free agents. And you've mentioned how it is a loaded class. So are there any top marquee guys that you got your eyes on, or are there any areas of this team that you're like, all right, that guy could go easily plug and play and fill that hole for this team?
So I think I alluded to this earlier, I think if JD Martinez opts out, the Red Sox should make a run at Castellanos. I think he's so good offensively. He's a little bit of a defensive liability, but if you put him into the DH spot, bam, you don't have to worry about his defense, and maybe figure it out when they do interleague play and playoffs when that time comes. But I know that he opted out of 2 years, 34 mil. So he probably wants around 20 million, but then the Reds are going to probably give him that qualifying offer because they know he'll reject it. And whatever team he signs with, they have to give the Reds a draft pick. I don't know if the Red Sox will want to do that because of how, like I said, this long-term stability thing, they want to continue to build and really build this farm system. But I think he might be really worth just having conversations with, seeing what you can do with him. But JD Martinez has to opt out for that to happen. And I just think if you just bring in a reliable relief pitcher, that's it. Just a reliable relief pitcher, fans will be happy. I think they can get by with Eovaldi, bring back Erod on the team-friendly deal, Chris Sale, Nick Pivetta. I think you can get by with those four for a little while because I liked what I saw from Pivetta. If Eovaldi mirrors the season again, he's going to take over the number one spot next year. So for more or less, I think the starters are in good shape, but just go get a reliable relief pitcher. The Red Sox fans have been asking and begging for like three seasons now.
Yeah, a relief, especially when you looked at that bullpen, like the fact that Cora was just so quick to go to a starter like Eovaldi late in the game because it was like, I don't know if I really want to trust Hansel Robles for the third straight game. I was like, I feel you, Cora. I don't know if you want to keep going back to Ryan Brazier as your best setup guy. So I definitely feel you on that area. And I think a JD Martinez, he's someone that you just want to keep in your lineup because I think he does a lot more than just the box score. As a he's really a cerebral type player where he's, you know, in there with the iPad. I think it was a big reason why he had a down season because it seems like they didn't use technology as much last year. There wasn't as much in-game scouting for these players. I think it's a reason why JD Martinez struggled last year. And he's a guy that I think if you have him in your lineup, he can affect and rub off on other players and maybe their work habits, because it seems like there was a lot of dialogue with him and Mookie Betts on their swings and how to approach the game. And he's just a locked in player when he's at the plate. He's great at reading pitches and pitchers. So I think when you have him, he's just like another coach basically on the field with the way he sees the game and his perspective. So I think getting JD Martinez is more than what he does for you with his bat. But if he does opt out, do you think there's maybe a chance that Kyle Schwarber slides into that DH role for the Red Sox?
I think it's definitely possible. I think it's going to come down to money. And also, Kyle Schwarber's only 28. This probably is his last chance at like a big contract. and he's probably going to go where the money is. And I'm not going to blame anyone for chasing that money, because especially in a time when you're trying to get that last big contract, you want everything out of it. I don't know if the Red Sox would be willing to shell out 5, 6, maybe 7 years to somebody who will be 35 at the end of a 7-year contract and just kind of end up with a DH who is, would be versatile like JD Martinez is. But it's like, he's got the $11.5 million option. How much higher do you want to go with him?
Yeah, that's true. We'll see if the Red Sox decide to do that. I mean, $11 million is not like crazy, but if he's only going to play DH, we'll see. I mean, 28 years old, that's actually like took me back a little bit, because I felt like he was older. He just looks like a guy who's at least like 32 years old. So the fact that he's the same age as Bogarts, who's also 28, actually like shocked me a little bit. But just got a couple more questions for you before we wrap up here on the Locked On Diamondbacks podcast. Lauren Campbell, if you can't read it, if you're listening, Locked On Red Sox host. But where do you rank this team among AL contenders entering next season? Let's just assume they kind of bring back the same core and they get that reliever that you wanted, and maybe they add another starter. Like, do you think this is a top tier team in the American League entering 2022?
Top team. I think I'm going to call them a playoff team still.
Okay.
I think, conservative. I think the bullpen is just such a big question mark, where if they just add a couple of pieces there, then yeah, I'm just going to be more confident calling them a top team. But until, you know, the Rays have always improved themselves, the Yankees have improved themselves. You look at other teams throughout the AL, the Chicago White Sox, the Astros, obviously, they're always improving. There's always a deep lineup. There's always threats throughout their offense and defense. And look at the Red Sox bullpen, and it's like, oh, okay, Hansel Robles. Oh, okay, Austin Davis. Like, oh, okay. Like, that's not really threatening. No offense to those guys, but that's just the way the game goes sometimes. But I think if they add, just like I said, that one or two reliable pieces to the bullpen, I'm going to be more confident being like, yes, they are certainly the AL's like top two teams right there.
Yeah, I didn't understand the Robles move at the deadline, because I looked at his stats. Like, I didn't watch any Robles, but I just looked at his numbers. I was like, he's got like a 5 or 6 ERA. Like, why are the Red Sox relying on this guy to be a big part of their bullpen? It wasn't something that made a lot of sense to me at the time, but Bloom is coming from that Rays front office, and whenever they make a trade, they usually know something's up. So right now, I mean, the first move he made was trade Mookie Betts. And right now, I mean, I thought it was going to be an all-time disaster. And right now, it's looking a little bit better by the day. Of course, you never want to trade a guy like Mookie Betts, but I think it's a lot easy to stomach, a lot easier to stomach after seeing the developments over the last couple of years. But Lauren Campbell, I think it says that there on YouTube, but for the people listening, where can they find you on social media?
You can find me on Twitter at la 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 Lauren, 3 laws, Lauren with 4 R's, and then the Locked On Red Sox Twitter account at LO_Red Sox.
Lauren, thank you for hopping on today. Thank you for sitting in the chair. I mean, usually these are sad sessions for most people, but you must have been the first like playoff host who was like, hey, I'm not totally upset that we got knocked out. So Lauren, thanks for hopping on today, and thanks for making time with me today.
Thanks for having me.
How fun was that conversation, Miller? Thank you so much for having me on. That was such a great time. And thank you for making Locked On Red Sox and Locked On Diamondbacks your first listen of every single day. Thank you for hanging around. This was a bit of a longer episode than we're used to, so I appreciate your listenership. I'm going to end this show on a positive note, and that's that my positive note is that the Red Sox are still in good shape here. I think that they have a very good chance at making some really good moves in this offseason to bolster this team, make them more competitive with the Rays and the Yankees even, and the Astros. So this is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a very fun offseason, and I'm really excited. I'm excited to be here with you. So that will do it for today's episode of Locked On Red Sox. Thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen. Follow me on Twitter at lalalalauren, 3 laws, Lauren with 4 R's, and the Locked On Red Sox Twitter account, and find all of my work right on NESN.com. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the Locked On Red Sox podcast. When you subscribe, you never miss an episode, no matter when we release them. And do not forget to check out all the other shows across the Locked On Network. Locked On Yankees, Locked On Rays, Locked On Diamondbacks. Everyone is having a great time. We all love being able to talk baseball with you. And now that you've made Locked On Red Sox your first listen of the day, please go make Locked On MLB your second listen. As Paul Francis Sullivan, my good friend Sully, brings you his unique perspective of MLB, both present and past. It's free to download wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day. We'll see you soon.